because you've done a calendar, mugs, book boxes. Oh, that's adorable. It's so it's cute.
It's got a little bee on it, right? On the handle.
Yeah. Let it be.
And it's got a little bee. So tell us about that. How did that come about?
Well, I wanted to make more money.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Always a good motivator.
Yeah.
I wanted to make more money, and we used to have a photography business. So we're very good at photography. And I told my husband, I said, make a calendar for 24. And it was places for the Josiah Reynolds places that I had mentioned in the books. And then we have a subscription box. I would suggest people buy those for other people's birthdays and for Christmas. And we do it all with PayHip.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
Abigail Keem.
Yes, we do. It was so fun. Yes. Such a fun interview.
Yes. Yeah. She writes historical mystery and cozy mystery. Mm-hmm. And we talked to her about that and writing. Coming to writing later in life, I think, would be one of the topics, too, because she said she talked about how she waited until she was a little bit older before she had to have time. She had to have the free time and the energy to do it.
Yeah.
And merchandising, which was fun.
Yeah.
She does mugs and is working.
And her mugs they're so cute. They're big. Like a lot of times you get those little dinky mugs when you do POD mugs, you know, and stuff. This one was it was hefty and so cute. Yeah.
Yeah. And the link to her website will be in the show notes. So if you wanted to go see her merchandise and stuff, she did a calendar. Talk to her about that.
I love that.
Yeah. Very cool. So lots of cool ideas. And so that's coming up soon. We have a new supporter this week. Tyler Davis, and they chose the musical Note.
Yep. Hey, Tyler. Thanks for supporting.
Yes, we're so happy for a new supporter and for all the supporters that have continued to, you know, support us through the weeks and months. We really appreciate it, and it's very encouraging to us.
So much, so much, so much. So, what's been going on with you, Sarah?
We went out of town. We went to the mountains for a couple of days.
And it was lovely,
beautiful. There was still snow on the mountains. We were in Estes Park, so there was we were able to go on a hike and stuff. It wasn't snowy there, but you could see the snow, which is perfect, because then you don't have to shovel it yourself or drive in it. So that was great. So we did that, and that's about all I've had going on. But I did notice I got an email from BookFunnel, and they have now all their webinars and Q&As saved. So if you saw something that you were interested in, but you weren't able to make it live, they have all their stuff on their site. So I'll link to that in the show notes.
Cool.
But because they're starting to do a lot of webinars about direct sales, like how to get started with that, and just Q&A on using BookFunnel. So that's always helpful. So,
yes,
so that's sum total of all my writing stuff I've been doing this week.
That's good. Well,
basically.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay.
What about you?
Well, I finished the epilogue. I think I said that last week, and I sent it to the editor on Friday, and it was, it's actually longer than I thought it was. I thought it was about 2,300 words. It's 2,750 words. So almost 3,000 word epilogue. And I said in the email, listen, it's a friend of mine. It's not my normal editor, because I didn't want to bug her. So my friend who edits said, I'll do it. And so, but I was like, listen, I'm a little rusty. It's been a while. So I'm open to all suggestions. You're not going to hurt my feelings or anything. And she wrote back and she said, this is hilarious and very, very sexy. And I was like, great. I feel really good about that.
You haven't lost it.
I haven't lost it yet. And so, yeah, that's What I did, I was out of town over the weekend too. It was one of my friends in Austin's birthday. So we went and had a little girls' weekend, and that was super fun. And then I've been working on the novella. I'm just going back through it because, you know, it's been a while since I read that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that the epilogue and the novella actually matched, you know, mm-hmm. that I hadn't gotten something wrong. And I did get her last name wrong. So I've got to go back and fix that. But yeah, so just working. I'm going to put those covers and the novella out on May 6th. So I've got a few things to do, back of the book stuff and mm-hmm. all of that. And yeah, that's what's also going on.
Pre-release
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. So that's all that's going on with me, though. Not much.
Okay. Well, we should get on with Abigail's interview then.
Yeah, it was. Right. It's a great interview.
All right. So here is Abigail. Well, today we are really excited to talk with Abigail Keem. Hi, Abigail. How are you?
I am delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're so happy you're here.
Yes, we're excited to talk to you. So let me read your bio real quick. Abigail Keem is the award-winning author of the Josiah Reynolds Mysteries and the 1930s Mona Moon Mysteries. She has written 45 novels.
That is amazing.
So you've been busy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm working on my 46th and 47th one at the same time. And I'm telling
you, gosh.
I don't recommend that for anybody.
It's hard. Not your normal process, huh?
No.
Well, how did you get into writing?
Well, I've always wanted to be a writer. And in the second grade, I wrote Bobby Bobo Gets Baptized at the Big Bone Baptist Church. I turned that in. And Bobby Bobo is a real country western music singer in Cincinnati on the Midwestern Hayride. And he was baptized at our church on Big Bone Road. And I wrote a little story in a childish way about it. Anyway, the teacher called my mother up and said, you should do everything you can to encourage her to be a writer.
Wow.
And when I got older, mm-hmm. I wrote it again, but from an adult perspective. And my mother did exactly what the teacher told her to do, Mrs. Schaus. And my mother didn't drive, so we get on a bus. And at that time, there weren't library hubs. You had to go to the main libraries. And mm-hmm. we went to the main library in Cincinnati from across the river. We lived in Northern Kentucky. And she would get me shopping bags full of books. And we would come back on the bus and I would read all those books and then we'd fill up the shopping bags again and go back to the Cincinnati library. And I tell you, that library has a very distinctive smell to it. I can't explain it, but it smells library 1962. Mm. A couple years ago, because they had remodeled it and everything, mm-hmm. I went back, and as soon as I walked in, I smelled that smell, that mm-hmm. oak, and it just brought back a flood of memories. My mother and I going down there with those shopping bags and picking up those books.
That's amazing. What a great memory.
It is, yeah. The impact that teachers and parents can have, and you know, yes. you don't see it right away till later. So,
right.
Well, what is your definition of success?
Well, I think if you're a professional writer, one is that the public like your books, and I think money has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I hate to tell your audience this, but writers don't necessarily write because they have a burning desire. They have to make a living at it. So if they are not making a living at it and they just want to write as a hobby, that's fine. But most professional writers have to pay bills like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's a sign of success, is a public willing to pay for your work.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're a good writer and that your craft improves as time goes on. Wouldn't you say so, Sarah?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a good combination of like, you want financial success, but you also want the readers to love your books and mm-hmm. you want to feel good about it. Yeah, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I say in the beginning that writers write for themselves. I don't like readers sending me ideas or telling me they don't want something. I really, really dislike
ignore that.
I'm going to write for myself first. And I'm going to write the way I want to write. And mm-hmm. if they like it, that's fine. And it's very funny. My first book was Death by Honeybee. And it was a cliffhanger. And because I was going to write a whole series about this beekeeping lady that lived in Kentucky. And I was crucified, absolutely crucified for having an ending that didn't have basically I didn't tie up everything. Now, everybody's doing it.
It's very common.
Everybody's doing cliffhangers on series. And I was thinking, well, what's the deal? You see cliffhangers on TV all the time. And now everybody's doing it. And when I first started out, I tried to get an agent. I had worked on this book for 2 years and I kept sending it to, at that time, there were quite a few publishers. And they told me, no, we like the book, but we're not going to publish it because your protagonist is too old.
Hmm.
We want young. She was, Josiah is 52 when the book starts. Now there are gobs and gobs mm-hmm. of mysteries with older protagonists. Mm-hmm. And I said to these publishers, I said, you mean nobody reads Miss Marple anymore? I find that very hard. And I said, don't you want to be ahead of the curve? Because my generation's getting older.
Right.
This was 12 years ago. And I said, no, we want young. We want mm-hmm. people in their late 20s, early 30s. That's what we want. That's what we're looking for.
Well, that's another case where publishing missed an opportunity and indies have come along and filled it and mm-hmm. have many happy readers because of it. So I was curious, when you say your book ends on a cliffhanger, the mystery is wrapped up, right? Or is it carry on?
Yes, the mystery is wrapped up, but not Josiah's life. She has a terrible accident at the end of it. But, you know.
But that's common for cozy and type series like that. That's common to have the threads of the life, whatever's going on, continue on.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I don't think that's too shocking.
You can read them as standalones, you know.
Right.
Like most mysteries, you read them as standalones. Mm-hmm. But you want to see about this woman's life and how she overcomes adversity and her and things happen to her that happen to real women in real life. She faces the same obstacles, such as her husband leaves her and, you know, things like that. So I wanted to write about a person. I was reading all these mysteries, and I've read mysteries, you know, Nancy Drew, since I was like 12 years old. And at that time, and this is like 14 years ago, everybody was young, everybody in a mystery, everybody was sweet. And I said, oh my gosh, let's write about a real woman who's sassy and bitter. Write about someone who's really, really bitter and make her a lot of fun. And that's what I did. And I've had a lot of fun with her. And then I started writing. I did want to write about a younger person. And I started writing an historical fiction book, 1930s Moon and Moon books, because I love history. And to me, the 30s are more interesting than the 20s because what was going on in the 20s? Well, everybody was in Paris getting drunk and writing the American novel, but it was in the 30s that real things were happening. Politically, things were exploding, riots, women were starting demanding at that time equal pay. A lot of interesting things were going on in the 30s. So I write about that and I weave it into the storyline, real events.
I love that. And we're going to talk about that later. But I want to ask you real quick, what assumptions did you, what do you wish you'd known about writing and craft when you started writing?
that it was going to be really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So true.
I did not understand the marketing aspect of it. I come from a business background. I've had businesses before, and I had to amass a certain amount of money in order to write, because you have to have large blocks of time to write.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, if you're young, you can write after you get home from work. Mm-hmm. So when you are in your 40s and 50s, you've got to have large blocks of time, because you just don't have the energy to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I had to wait till I got to a certain point in my life that I could, like, okay, I'm just going to fulfill my dream. This is my bucket wish. This is what I've always really wanted to do. And I had no idea. I thought that I would amass a certain amount of fans and they would just, from that, just grow. No. I didn't realize coming down the pike was all these other writers who would impact, and the competition now was very, mm-hmm. very hard, and that I now spend 60% of my time marketing. And that just takes away from your time of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get in a different frame of mind.
Yeah. So what our next question was actually, our next question was actually about marketing. So what do you do for marketing, and is there anything that you wish you'd known about that other than just like the time it would take?
Well, being an older person who started writing professionally later on, I did not understand Kindle.
Uh-huh.
I did not understand why anybody would prefer Kindle over a book.
Mm-hmm. Over a print book, right?
Mm-hmm. Over a print book. I did not understand that. And I think that hampered me in the beginning, because that's what I was used to. And these younger writers, they understood it immediately because they were more interested in computers and grown up with computers. Whereas I consider a computer a necessary evil. I mean, for many years, I wrote it longhand.
Wow.
I think my lack of understanding the new technology hampered me. And now we're having to learn everything all over again because of AI. So a new revolution has come, and you've got to catch up if you're going to be relevant. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the thing. I mean, there's a lot of good mystery series coming out, and you're competing against these readers read everything. They read romance, they read fantasy, they read mystery. What kind of mystery? Is it a thriller mystery? Is it a cozy mystery? Is it an animal cozy mystery? Is it a campy cozy mystery? So you're competing against all these subgroups. Mm-hmm. And you've just got, as a writer, you've got to remain relevant.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Everything changes. Nothing stays static.
Yeah. No. And you got to look at what everybody's doing every 6 months, because it changes every 6 months. Now, one thing that I have found very, very helpful is that I'm a reader of 30 newsletters of different authors and of different genres, different age groups. And I look to see what they are doing on their newsletter. And sometimes I pick up really good tips from that. Now, one thing that I'm trying to conquer, and I'm very good at, is TikTok. Oh my gosh, TikTok. But I have a friend that's on TikTok, and she is amazing on it, and that's Jay Fuller. If you haven't checked out her TikTok little videos, you should, because she is absolutely amazing at what she does.
That's great. That's so interesting. I like TikTok, but mostly I just like to watch TikTok. I've used it for my books, but I just mostly like to watch it. What assumptions did you make at the beginning of your writing career, and looking back, did they turn out to be right or wrong?
No, that's a very good question, Miss Jane. the assumptions, Well, I thought I would get more support from my friends, and I didn't. My daughter never even reads my books.
Right.
It's like the prophet has no honor in his own country.
Yeah, right. Right.
I had no idea that the lack of support from family and friends would, I thought everybody would want to read my stuff. I think in this game, you have to be a little humble.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing is I see new authors do, they are rude. And you can't be rude. You can't be rude to readers, and you certainly cannot be rude to other authors. And I've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, you are burning a bridge there.
Because you just never know.
Well, you don't have to like a person to work with. I mean, coming from a background, I've worked with a lot of people I didn't particularly like, but we worked for a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, just don't comment all the time. You don't have to comment. But I hope that answers your question. It was just the pace of writing. The pace of writing mysteries, and if you have a series, and this goes for sci-fi and other genres, the pace in which you have to work every day and the sacrifices you have to make. You know, you read about all these Fitzgerald and Capote and all these guys, and they would go to Capri, and they would go to Paris, and they would take 6 months to write, you know, half of their book. You know, I put out 4 books every year, and I've got to have that book ready to go within 3 months. I got to start to finish and getting it up on all the pay sites. And I mean, it's hard. It's a hard process.
It's a full-time job, right?
It's more than a full-time job. People from 9 to 5 get off after 5, but not an author. Because if you're not writing, then you're thinking about it.
That is very true.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of thinking about things, we've mentioned before, like, about how you've had to make some changes in your assumptions about how life would go as a writer. Have you had to make any changes in your thinking, like the way you approach either your writing or your marketing?
Or just life as a writer. Yeah.
Well, let's see. I guess I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be. And some of the things that I made a mistake on was that I did not develop enough relationship with writers in my genre early on. I don't think you can be successful if you don't have friendships with other authors in your genre and you work together to promote each other's books.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's definite, and I don't think I pursued that because I thought writing was a lonely, solitary adventure, and it's not. Like anything else in business, and this is a business, is that you've got to cultivate relationships. And I am more than happy if somebody emails me and say, can you promote my book on your newsletter? Sure, I'll do it. As long as they promote my book on their music.
Right.
There's got to be, you know, grease in the palm on both palms.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be the only thing. What was the other thing I regret that I didn't do? One was not cultivating relationships with authors in my genre. The other thing was... I tell young people now, don't go indie. Young people that are starting out, because it's very, very difficult. And if you don't know anything about business, it's hard, very hard to do. It's a huge learning curve. I tell them, get an agent.
Really? Yeah. That's interesting.
I had 2 agents when I started out. One was totally incompetent, and I fired her. And the one that I had and I put much hope with because I thought I'd be picked up by a publishing house. She retired on me. And after that, I just thought, well, you know, I'm wasting time here. You know, I'm in my 50s and time is slipping away. I got to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I became indie, and I've never regretted that decision. I'll tell you another thing, because it's so complicated to do all this marketing. I wish I had paid more attention to Amazon and Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. I wish I had paid more attention to that. And I didn't, because I really didn't trust Amazon. But after all these years, it turns out they've kept a lot of their promises.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're a huge book market.
Yes.
Lots of readers there. Yeah.
Right. 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 Well, if you were starting over today, what would you do differently?
I would try to get an agent.
Mm.
And if I had to go indie, I would just stick with Amazon. I wouldn't go with the other pay sites. Mm. Although I will say that Kobo Plus is really picking up a lot of readers. But the first 3 years that I worked with Kobo, they would never put my books on any of their promotions because they were basically for Canadian authors, but that has all changed.
That's all changed
since they were bought out. So I would say Kobo is my second leading moneymaker.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So do you do the... So, like, because you can allow your books to be in the subscription plan through Kobo. Do you do that as well?
Yes.
Yeah, I do
and
too.
And that's what is really picking up. That Kobo mm-hmm. Plus is really, really picking up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Have you?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of a hot take.
Yeah, that is a hot take. Yeah.
A lot of people are going out of Kindle Unlimited because they feel like now is a good time to do that. So, I'm glad that you talked about that because it's good to hear different opinions. So let's go back to historicals, though, now, because you mentioned that you like to write historicals. You like to research historicals. I love that, too. I love reading about the real people and events. How do you incorporate those into your book? And I'm sure people have questions about when you can use a real person in your book. Is there any legal or anything you worry about with that?
If they're public historical figures, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay.
Because I weave people in it that hundreds of books have been written about, like Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry from that. And I weave it in within historical events, within the storyline, and then I have dialogue. I don't want to hit people over the head with history because they may not like history the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do it through dialogue. I do it through events. And then I put an addendum at the back of the book. More information about these events. And I don't think if you're writing about the 30s and 20s, you have to worry about anybody coming after you. Unless you put something, if they have an estate like Jean Harlow does, I write about Jean Harlow. If I put something that is scandalous about her, you might have somebody coming after you for that. But if you just write that she was a movie star, and my Mona Moon looks like her, that's okay. There's no problem with that. But I'll give you a little thing that I love about these books. I write about Gertrude Bell, who was the cartographer, British cartographer, who drew the lines for Iran and Iraq in the 20s, and she started the Iraqian Museum.
Mm.
She's very well known, and she and T.E. Lawrence used to, you know, do stuff together and everything.
Mm-hmm.
On my Pinterest, I put a picture of her and T.E. Lawrence at the pyramids. And I got an email from the Gertrude Bell estate saying, oh, we're so glad that you're writing about her. We don't want her to be forgotten. And you have posted a picture that we don't have.
Oh, how funny.
It was from her great-great-nephew. And so I love stuff like that. And then I also, in my Josiah Reynolds, I have, she is a good friend of hers, Matt, who looks like Victor Mature. Mm-hmm. I talk about, because Victor Mature is from Louisville. Mm-hmm. And I had his daughter email me and said, oh, thank you for making Matt look like my daddy. Mm-hmm. You know, people, I don't want people to forget him and just keep talking about him. I just love it. So I get emails like that, and I really enjoy that.
That's great. So I know Sarah does have fans that are very particular about their history. Do you get the same thing with your historicals?
No.
Really?
No. I don't.
You need to change. You need to change the genre. I mean, the time frame, Sarah, that you write in.
I think so.
What are they particular about?
Oh, just different tiny, tiny details about like whether this amount of money would equal this modern day amount or not, things like that. It's
or if this was if the safety pin was something they could use back then or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
I did get one. And this was the last one that were on a cruise, and I had them dressed up on the first night. She and her husband, Mona Moon and her husband, Lord Farley, dress up on the first night of the cruise or voyage going to England. And I had a lady email me and say, oh, I am so sorry, but people did not dress up in their finery on the first night because their clothes were being pressed in the trunks. And I said, well, I wish he had told me this before I wrote that scene because I'm not going back to any cases. And then she wrote back, she goes, well, if you had watched the movie Dobbs, that was done in the 30s, you would have seen the scene that they wore their finery and they were like, oh, new money. They were
just new money. Oh, my goodness.
I said, well, I'll read the book or check the movie out. I said, but that's the only one I've ever gotten. But that's a great detail, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let him know, because I won't make that same mistake again.
Correct.
You know, I have young teenage boys who do my yard work for me because we live on a cliff. I just can't do these hills anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was asking them what they were learning in history, and they just kind of, I don't know. And I said, well, don't you learn about Daniel Boone? Now, Daniel Boone is the one that opened up Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
A pioneer that opened up Kentucky. And they said, we've never heard of him.
Oh, my gosh.
We're talking about 60, 70 years old. So that's like, okay, you know, I've got to put Daniel Boone in my books. And I have found out that people don't really know history. Mm. They don't.
Yeah.
Well, they don't. They don't. The people I talk to. And I think these kind of books, they're entertaining, mm-hmm. and they give you a lot of information.
Yeah.
And they're fun to read.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
So how much time, like if you only have 3 months to write your book, how much time do you spend researching? Or is it more that like you have all this knowledge and you're just incorporating it into your book?
Well, I had a lot of knowledge, and of course, my parents were, you know, Depression and World War II. So I remember all the things that they told me and what was going on. So, but I double check everything that I write. Mm-hmm. And I don't write outlines or anything like that. I'm a pantser. And then my husband goes through and he double checks all the facts. And then I have that addendum. He goes through that, and then it's checked again. So I'm pretty confident of the information I'm putting in my historical books. And I think there are certain things that as a civilization, it's a global civilization, there are certain things we need to know about the world mm-hmm. and our mm-hmm. history.
Right.
We don't know it. We're doomed to repeat it.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your merchandise, because you've done a calendar, mugs, book boxes. Anything else I'm missing?
No.
There's your. Oh, that's adorable. It's so
it's cute.
It's got
a little bee on it, right? On the handle?
Yeah. Let it be.
Let it be, and it's got a little bee. So tell us about that. How did that come about? Do you sell them from your website? How, you know?
Well, I wanted to make more money.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Always a good motivator.
Yeah.
I wanted to make more money, and we used to have a photography business, so we're very good at photography. And I told my husband, I said, make a calendar for 24. So we did, and we sold out. And it was places and for the Josiah Reynolds places, books that I had mentioned in the books. And then we have a subscription box. I would suggest that people buy those for other people's birthdays and for Christmas. Mm. And of course we have the little mug, and we do it all with PayHip. Now, we look at WooCommerce, Commerce and Shopify, which is the most prevalent that you see on people's websites. But PayApp was easier to use. And my husband, you know, otherwise you're going to have to hire somebody to do it. And, you know, or you're going to have to spend weeks researching it. So my husband did it. And also, we put our ebooks on it, we put audiobooks on it, and now we're putting print books on it. We're having a little fuzzy time with the mail shipping costs. So we're kind of trying to figure that one out. But if it brings an added income, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. So did you do a print run for your calendars like you did a set number and sold them yourself, or were they POD, print on demand?
On demand, because the thought behind, okay, you have 100 printed, and what if you don't sell them? You're stuck. Now, on the calendars, I would say they were a lost leader. We made, I think, $1 off of them. But it gets people interested, and it keeps, you know, you have a 12-month reminder of your book. So then you make your money with the subscription boxes and the mugs, and that's where you make some sort of profit.
So your subscription box is more, is it like a single box that's the same all the time, or do you do a different box? Like every quarter, every month, or something like that?
Well, I need to go in and change it and refresh it, but it would be the same box, and they could just put in what book that they want. I haven't worked all the bugs out of that yet, but, you know, I'm working on it, and I hope for Christmas we have a big, big demand.
Big push. And do you fulfill all that yourself with the mugs and the boxes?
I just do it myself.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
I am too. Well,
if you give it to somebody else, they have to take a cut, and there goes the profit of it. I can do that while I'm watching television or whatever, listening to an audio book.
Well, I think it's great to hear about you using PayHip. And I looked at your store before we got on it, and it's very streamlined. It's like, it's easy to find stuff and it looks very nice. And so I think PayHip's a good solution if people want to get in direct sales, but they don't want to do the whole Shopify store. So, and you're able to do it with print books as well?
We are starting to put print books on. The page is not up yet. My assistant is still putting that on.
Yeah.
And my husband will come in and double check everything. But what was I going to say about this?
Oh, about PayHip?
You have to train your readers to go to your store because they're not used to that. They're used to going to Kobo or iBooks or Amazon. And you, what we now, we have a sale on our box set books, ebook box set books. And I put that in the newsletters, and they're really starting to nibble at it and try it. I would say the people that will buy from your store are younger people that are used to going to clicks and going to different places to purchase things. And it's a learning curve for the readers, but I'm hoping by next year, I would like for them to buy my ebooks directly from me. I'm sorry, Amazon, but I'm tired of the 60-day wait. Give my money. I want my money now.
That's like, give my money.
I want my money.
So when they order their paperbacks from you, though, are you doing that through Book Vault or are you personally mailing?
Can you see?
You got them all back there. Okay. Sarah asked that and I wasn't sure what she was. Okay. That's fine.
There's nothing to put an address on.
I must have had an aneurysm during that. Not to make fun of aneurysms, they're not funny. But anyway, what's the best thing you've done to set yourself up for success, do you think?
The best thing I've done?
Mm-hmm. To set yourself up for success.
Well, be available.
Mm.
Be available to answer your readers' questions. Be available to other authors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Be available. And be available to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to take it on the chin. You can't take. I don't have this problem, but I have a girlfriend who writes a different type of genre, and she's just the readers. I don't know. She's terribly criticized all the time, and they're personal insults. And I gotta say, I had that at the beginning of my writing, and I don't have it anymore. But I tell her, you got to take it on the chin.
Right.
And you just got to be tough.
Right.
You just got to be tough. And that's what I'm saying, that as our society gets coarser, just go with the flow. Just keep on trucking. Keep on trucking.
Yeah, because eventually you will gather people around yourself who like your writing, and it may just take a while to find that group that resonates with you. So if you keep at it, you should get to that point. But yeah, our society is, especially with the internet, people are very willing to say anything that
pops maybe, in their head.
You know, that maybe they wouldn't say it to you face to face, but they're fine with typing it on the screen. So yeah, you just kind of have to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, this has been interesting and fun to talk with you and hear about how your books are doing and all your merchandising. So tell people where they can find out more about you and your books.
Well, you can go to my website, and that is abigailkeam.com. That's abigailkeam.com.
Excellent.
And go to Amazon, Pinterest, TikTok, whatever. Whatever, just do it.
Excellent.
Perfect. Well, we will have all those links in the show notes, and they'll also be at wishidknownforwriters.com. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to that same link/support. And thanks to Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast, and Adriel Williams for doing the admin.
Yep.
See everybody next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.